We work hard at Cross Currents to tell stories that reflect the diversity of the Bay Area. But we have one major limitation. Most of our interviews are in English. We do talk to people who don't speak English, but they end up sounding something like this.
Tenemos más de 12 años en este lugar.
We've been here more than 12 years working in this place. The founder was my mom. 12 years ago,
hearing Spanish speakers covered up with voiceovers frustrated San Francisco-based novelist Daniel Alarcón.
I think that there's the story, there's the words people are saying, then there's the way they're saying it. And that tells you a lot about who they are, where they come from, their history and their culture. And those are things that just can't, you know, if you have a voiceover, it's lost.
Daniel Alarcón is the host of Radio Ambulante, a new Spanish language podcast that's produced right here at KALW. Alarcón is primarily known as a novelist. He was named one of the top 20 authors under 40 by The New Yorker, and his work often appears in Granta magazine and Harper's. But recently, he's made a shift to radio. Alarcón joined me in studio, and I asked him to start by telling me how he first fell in love with sound.
I have been fascinated by radio since I was a kid. My father was a radio announcer when he was growing up. In Arequipa, Peru, we used to make radio programs in our, you know, in our, my parents' bedroom every Sunday, where my father would interview us, and we would send these cassette tapes back to Lima to my cousins, and we'd get these cassette tapes back from our cousins in Lima. And so this was, I didn't realize it at the time, but these were basically like, you know, the Alarcón family hour special, you know, kind of thing. And I do think there's just something about radio that's magical. Now, I'd never actually held a microphone until I decided with my wife, Carolina Guerrero, the executive director of Radio Ambulante, until we decided we were going to do this. So that's quite a different step.
So from your childhood up until now, like what was going on during that gap?
In my life, like, or my radio life?
Like your radio life was kind of in your childhood, your father and those recordings, and then... And then Radio Ambulante.
I wrote a novel about radio, which is not the same thing.
A novel about radio.
Yes.
Lost City Radio.
That's right. Yeah. Which sort of took me to a lot of different places and visited a lot of different radio stations. And I visited a cousin of mine who was working in a campesino radio station in northern Peru. When my novel came out in 2007, at the end of that year, the BBC called me up and asked me to do a radio special where I was just the guy talking and the guy doing the interviews. I'd never... you know, held a microphone or did any production. And what happened was this, when the piece finally came out, it was edited in London without me. We did interviews in English and in Spanish, and for aesthetic reasons, they ended up cutting a lot of the Spanish language interviews. I mean, you can't have a 45-minute radio special with voiceovers. So I was frustrated, you know? I mean, I think the producers did a great job, the editors were fantastic, and it was a great experience for me, but I couldn't get over this sort of omission, you know? And that was sort of the first time I thought to myself, I was like, what would it be like if there was a space for Spanish language storytelling on the radio?
Why do you think there wasn't until that time?
I have no idea.
Like, why?
And we have talked with so many producers here in the States and Latin American fans of some of the great narrative radio shows here in the U.S., who also can't believe it. And some people said to us, I had that same idea 10 years ago, you know?
So what do you think is the difference between, for example, that person who said, I had this idea 10 years ago or 15 years ago or 5 years ago, and you and your team making it work now? Is it technology, like the Kickstarter campaign? What is it that makes it work today?
You know, I think there's a few things. I think one is just the sort of dumb, blind enthusiasm of two people who don't know what they're doing. In this case, my wife and I pushed the ball down the field a little bit without really knowing what we were getting into, just out of sheer sort of like, oh, let's, this can't be that hard. I do think that the technology you mentioned is super important. One Kickstarter sort of helps you get your word out and get a little seed money. Things like, I mean, this is super simple, but Skype, Dropbox, FTPs, you know, where you can move big files all across the world, relatively cheap digital recorders that you can buy for producers that you know, have never had one before. That stuff didn't exist, and that helps a lot.
Yeah. When I interviewed Ira Glass of This American Life, one thing I asked him was, how do you get your stories? Because there was a feeling that there wasn't a diversity in kind of the ethnic communities covered in his stories. How does Radio Ambulante get the stories? Where do you look, and what are you looking for?
Well, look, we're looking for surprise. We're looking for plot. We're looking for this happened, then this happened, then there's a surprise, and this is the conclusion. You know, we're looking for something that has the elements of great literature. That's personally what I look for. How do we get them? We put the call out. We do a lot of outreach to journalism schools in Latin America. We use social networks to get the message out. We've done a lot of press in Latin America, so people know about us. It's hard, though. I think that the diversity issue that you mentioned with a show like This American Life, we have a different version of it, but we have the same problem. So I don't want Radio Ambulante, and I know no one on the team wants Radio Ambulante to be a place where you get stories from different Latin American capitals. You know, so it's like Buenos Aires and Bogota and Mexico City and Lima. No, we want stories that push out to the marginalized communities within our own countries, you know, so that we're not just getting stories from the This American Life demographic, but they happen to speak Spanish. One of the things we were told that we've rejected as a premise is that Mexicans only care about stories from Mexico and Puerto Ricans only care about stories from Puerto Rico and Colombians only care about Colombia, et cetera, et cetera. We don't believe that's true. And one of the premises of Radio Ambulante is that there is curiosity. If a story is well told, it doesn't matter where it comes from.
That's local journalist and author Daniel Alarcón. He's hosting a bilingual event for Radio Ambulante tomorrow night as part of Litquake at the Mission Cultural Center in San Francisco. You can find more information at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Today, we're delving into the story of Radio Ambulante, a new Spanish language podcast that's produced right here at KALW. The show aims to tell sound-rich stories around a central theme, stories like the ones we produce here on Cross Currents or that we hear on This American Life. But these stories are told in Spanish. The story topics so far have ranged from a famous prison break in Uruguay to doppelgangers who find they have similar interests and have been connected from way before. The second episode was on the theme of nombres, or names. For an English language companion piece, Radio Ambulante explored the story behind the name Daniel D. Portado. In Spanish, the name is a play on words. It translates to Daniel the Deported. If you've ever heard an American politician weigh in on the immigration debate by saying something like this,
self-deportation,
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 the answer is self-deportation.
It's thanks to him.
Illegals are bad. Illegals are bad. Illegals are bad. I would deport my own mom and dad, you know.
That's Daniel D. Portado as portrayed by Lalo Alcaraz, the renowned Chicano cartoonist in Los Angeles who created the character back in the 90s. It was in response to a controversial state ballot proposition, Prop 187, that was designed to keep undocumented immigrants from accessing health care, public education, and other social services. Radio Ambulante reporter Nancy Lopez brings us the story behind the character, the name, and the media hoax that put Daniel Deportado on national television.
People say that all political trends in the U.S. can be traced back to California. When it comes to immigration, that's definitely true. Let's go back to 1994. The governor was Pete Wilson. He was ultra-right-wing, and he was pushing a law called Proposition 187. It was the first anti-immigrant legislation to be passed by any state government. Prop 187 was crafted to deny health care and public education to undocumented immigrants living in California, all 2 million of them. It was super controversial, and Lalo Alcaraz remembers it very clearly.
Sometimes when I speak at crowds today, we're talking about Arizona and SB 1070, and I tell them, you know, back in 1994, we had the granddaddy of these laws, which was Prop 187, and it was just as crazy as it is now.
At the time, Lalo was making politically charged cartoons that appeared in the LA Weekly. He also wrote fake news stories that showed up in Pocho Magazine, a satirical zine he founded with some friends. And of course, Prop 187 struck a nerve.
I remember the day in the summer I was driving my friend Esteban Zuul to the airport because he lived in the Bay Area. I could feel in the pit of my stomach. We were talking about Prop 187 and how awful it was, and all the hate that it generated and legitimized to some people. And
he thought, it's as if the writers of the proposition wanted to make California so unwelcoming for immigrants that they would leave the U.S. on their own. Lalo and his friend Esteban decided to roll with this idea. First, they came up with a fake group called Hispanics for Wilson. The group was so militant, its members were willing to deport themselves.
And that's where self-deportation, the concept, was born.
That's also how the fake leader of this organization was born.
We had to come up with a name for the leader of this group. And I don't know how it came to me, but this guy had to be so staunchly anti himself, you know, his self-hating right-wing Republican, you know, like Herman Cain or something like that, that his very name had to state the obvious, that he was deported, Daniel Deportado.
They wrote a fake press release calling for the most outrageous things they could think of. The creation of self-deportation centers so that all Hispanics return to their country of origin. They denounced Mexican food as biological weapons.
You know, we had the 10K border fun run into Mexico where we'd give you a free pair of tennis shoes, but as long as you don't come back.
The press release went on to pledge that the group, Hispanics for Wilson, would retrain white-collar workers in agricultural, restaurant, and hotel maintenance arts once all illegal immigrants were successfully removed from the country. They listed Dr. Daniel Deportado, or Daniel Deportado, as a contact person. And they sent this fake press release out to real news agencies all across the state. It was dated September 16, 1994, coincidentally or not, the anniversary of Mexico's Independence Day. Now imagine you're a news editor at a big television network reading this press release. It would seem obvious that it was some kind of prank, right? But to the surprise of Lalo and his friends, it wasn't. Some people actually took the bait.
Took it a hook, line, and sinker, especially Telemundo.
Telemundo is the second largest Spanish-language television network in the country, and they invited Daniel Deportado onto their nationally syndicated news program, The Pedro Sefcik Show.
I said, oh my God, what are we going to do? And Esteban goes, we're going to go. What do you mean? We're going to go. I go, oh, shoot. I guess I'm Daniel Deportado.
This would be Daniel Deportado's very first appearance, and it would be on national television. So Lalo gelled his hair to the side, sported dark pilot glasses, and wore a business suit one size too big with a white tie.
You know, like kind of like 70s douchebag. You know, he doesn't have good clothes because he's not even a good sellout. You know, he doesn't even have an Armani suit. He's just like a cheap, self-hating, anti-immigrant Mexican that they got for cheap.
Daniel Deportado arrived at the network studios in Glendale, California, with an entourage, his fake assistant, and his fake bodyguard.
We were in the audience with a bunch of high school students and their parents. The high school students had gotten kicked out of school for protesting 187, right? So they were worked up and pissed off at us.
And if Daniel Deportado's mere presence wasn't enough to anger this crowd of immigrants, the things he said got people to jump out of their seats.
We support Pete Wilson so much, all Republican immigration policies so much, we vowed to deport ourselves back to Mexico. And then we would also deport the Chinese back to Mexico. You know, and the crowd went crazy. The crazier things we said, the crazier they got, you know. It was hilarious because they wanted to lynch us right on the spot.
The studio in Glendale was linked up via satellite to the network's headquarters in Miami, Florida, where the show was being taped. On the panel there were pro-immigrant activists from Los Angeles.
A couple of them that knew us And so they were kind of looking through the monitors going like, wait a minute, this is weird. You could tell they were kind of smirking going like, what the heck?
On the panel were also three Cuban attorneys who, like Daniel Deportado, were in full support of Prop 187.
It's like, who's the cartoon here? You know, is it me or is it these guys? You know, I mean, I'm just pretending, you know, these guys are actually arguing against their own communities, you know, and then
about the three fat Cubans.
The three fat Cubans. A little homeboy was sitting next to us, this little kid, like 15-year-old kid, goes up to me and goes, hey, you're a f***ing sellout, hey. He told me.
And you said?
I said, oh, whatever, cholo, you know, I don't know what I said.
There stood Lalo Alcaraz as Daniel Deportado, with his crazy getup and his entourage making absurd statements against Latino immigrants to a room packed with Latino immigrants. And no one in the audience in Glendale or on the panel in Miami called his bluff. And somehow he didn't break character, not for the whole hour.
One of the segment producers came over and goes, you know, I'm going to have to walk you guys out because the crowd's getting a little worked up here. They don't like you. And I go, está bien, joven, vamos, you know, whatever. My obnoxious voice. We hit the door. We ran to the car and we're laughing the whole way. That's when we like, whoa, we can't believe we just got away with it.
We couldn't find a recording of the show, but we know it was broadcast nationally and across 22 Latin American countries. It aired the Friday before the November election, when California voters would pass Prop 187 by a wide margin, 59%. But the immigration debate continued, and Daniel Deportado's call for self-deportation was heard almost too loud and clear. In a New York Times article, California Governor Pete Wilson said, quote, if it's clear to you that you cannot be employed and that you and your family are ineligible for services, you will self-deport, end quote. The piece was dated November 21, 1994, just weeks after Daniel Deportado hit the limelight. Over the next 2 years, Lalo Alcaraz would keep up his shenanigans while the U.S. Supreme Court debated the constitutionality of Prop 187. In 1996, he went to a Chicano protest in San Diego, California, as Daniel Deportado. He handed out leaflets promoting his latest project, a 2,000-mile-long condo complex on the U.S.-Mexico border called the Border Wall Estates. It was another hoax, of course.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Not so much for one Chicano activist in the crowd who threatened Daniel Deportado with a knife.
And he's telling me, I'll cut your tie off. I had an American flag tie. You want me to cut that tie off for you? I go, no, thank you. Strut off. I didn't even stop to say, it's a joke, dude, not because he was not having it.
Prop 187 was ultimately struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court. The judges ruled that California, as a state, could not make its own immigration laws. This was a job for the federal government. But fast forward to 2012. Most states have debated anti-immigrant bills reminiscent of Prop 187. And some, like Arizona, Alabama, and Georgia, have actually passed them. And the concept of self-deportation has reemerged. Now it's the official platform of the Republican Party. And no, they're not joking.
The concept of self-deportation in immigration is that if people are breaking the law, we as a nation or an individual state should take steps to ratchet up the level of law enforcement incrementally so that people start thinking, well, you know what, maybe I should follow the law.
That's Chris Kobach in an interview with Univision. He's a Kansas Secretary of State who helped write both Arizona and Alabama's anti-immigrant bills. He is also the man responsible for advising Mitt Romney on self-deportation.
I can never imagine it would have come turn into policy or become a national thing like it did. It's really, you know, just outrageous.
These real-life ironies are what can make Lalo's job as a cartoonist and humorist so easy. But as a husband and father of two, he can't help but feel deeply troubled by policymakers who who are so explicit in their animosity toward undocumented immigrants. In the end, for Lalo, this whole media hoax was his personal way of dealing with that.
I mean, I was really tired of feeling sick to my stomach. So it was just, you know, how I cope with life and make fun of it. And, you know, fortunately, you know, people like when I do that, you know.
When you cope with life.
You and I cope with life, yeah, and put it out for people to see. I mean, maybe it made it bearable for people.
So now that Mitt Romney has replaced Pete Wilson, now that SB 1070 in Arizona and HB 56 in Alabama have replaced Prop 187, now that self-deportation is being proposed as a real solution to the country's broken immigration system, Daniel Deportado is back. And it's not a joke.
Nancy Lopez is a reporter and producer with Radio Ambulante. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now we return to my conversation with the host and co-founder of the new Spanish language podcast, Radio Ambulante, novelist Daniel Alarcón. There are many issues to discuss, you know, in a broadcast like yours. But do you feel that in some issues, kind of the natural direction of the show would be to take a side, for example, politically in the immigration debates, for instance?
Without a doubt. I mean, I'm not going to plead objectivity on that issue. We have an affinity, obviously. We have a point of view on that particular issue. And we're going to tell stories coming from that perspective. I don't think that we want to fall into the traps of the way Latinos are the kind of standard tropes of Latino presence in the mainstream media, you know, the victim or the victimizer, you know, the oppressed minority or the savage other. You know, these are not the kinds of stories we want to tell. We want to tell complex, nuanced stories that entertain and move and provoke. But on that particular issue, there's no way that I can tell you that there's two sides to this debate and I'm, you know, trying to decide between the two of them. I mean, you know, I'm biased. So what can I do? In Latin American sort of political debates, I think there are going to be pieces we're going to produce that are going to perhaps generate some controversy. We did an interview, for example, with the deposed president of Honduras, Manuel Zelaya. And we got some pushback on it that we were partisans of him because we were letting him tell his story. I mean, it was an incredible piece of narrative. You know, he tells the backstory of a coup d'etat from his point of view, what it feels like to be deposed.
Wow.
Yeah. Not many people can tell that story. He can. And so on a strictly sort of narrative, in strictly narrative terms, for me, and I think for everyone who heard the story, we thought it was an important story to tell.
But then you got criticized.
We got criticized for because he's a leftist and, you know, some people thought he should have been deposed and that he shouldn't get a microphone to tell his story.
So these are things that you're going to deal with.
Yeah, sure. But quite apart from the politics of whether I'm pro-Zelaya or anti-Zelaya, I'm basically pre-ignorance. I don't know enough about Honduras to say I'm for him or against him. But in narrative terms, how could you not appreciate that story?
When you started off, what kind of target audience were you thinking about? And when you did continue to kind of work on this, did you realize that, hey, I have a target audience way bigger than I thought?
That's a great question. You know, because we're a global project, we produce globally, we also can be consumed globally. And it's one of those, you know, magical side effects of the internet is that you can start to aggregate big audiences based on small pockets of listenership all over, you know, the United States, Latin America, and the world. So I think we want to tell stories that are relevant to a lot of different communities. U.S. Latinos, second generation U.S. Latinos, people who have the habit of listening to NPR and public radio, listeners in Latin America who, you know, are savvy enough to get online and download something. And also get on radio stations so that we don't have to have those barriers of access. And there's a fourth or fifth audience, I can't remember how many I've described now, but that I think is equally important, is hundreds of thousands of people studying Spanish in the U.S. There's not going to be anywhere else where they can hear so many different accents, so many different vocabularies from so many different countries with these sophisticated, entertaining kinds of stories, thought-provoking stories. at the end of the day, I think, you know, the audience that is going to respond to the story is going to find it one way or another. You just have to keep producing good work.